A soft click of the cell door wakes me. I turn to Kindheart and see the whites of his eyes gleaming in the pale light of our jail cell. I have no intention of going quietly. They'll have to beat me senseless to get me out of here.
Apprentice?
My ears prick up.
Are you in there?
Who's asking?
A friend.
The door swings slowly open to reveal a familiar face staring at me with wide eyes, illuminated by a dim candle nearby, panting with excitement. Is this what I think it is? Praxos nods. I turn back to Kindheart. Can you walk?
Yes,
he answers. I look at Praxos. He's coming with us, I say.
What? No, just you, apprentice. Leave that heathen to rot in here. He'll just slow us down.
Kindheart grunts as he tries to rise, then settles back to the floor.
He's right. You go.
No, I snap. Take my hand and get up. We're leaving together. Kindheart resigns himself to my will and rises slowly to his feet. We shuffle to Praxos, who gives me an ill look.
Where are we going? Where are the guards? How did you... Apprentice, please, save your questions for later. This is going to get ugly if we are discovered.
I nod. We tiptoe out of the prison like three cartoon characters, checking around each corner as we go. When we step into the outside air, the night sky is ablaze with stars. Although I was rudely aware of the cool air while in my prison cell, the air feels even colder now. We turn another corner and rush to the end of a short corridor. Everything is grayish purple, with starlight shadows. There are no smells and no sounds, save for our footsteps. We reach a latched wooden door, and Praxos grabs its handle. He pauses, looks at me, and nods. Then he takes a breath and opens it with a sharp click. The door hinges cry out a ponderous moan as he pushes the door open just enough for us to slip outside.
Hey, what are...
Praxos slides a sharp knife up through the bottom of the guard's chin, deep into his brain cavity. His question, frozen on his lips. He tremors for a moment, then goes limp. Praxos and I catch him and quietly lay him on the cobblestones. He takes the guard's spear and hands it to me. We wrap the guard's dark wool cloak around Kindheart.
Do you recognize this alley, apprentice?
Praxos asks. I do. I once planned to have a tryst with Hecate sometime in this alley. I look at Kindheart. He furrows his brow, so I repeat my statement to him.
I thought you said you did not mate with this woman,
he asks. I didn't, but it wasn't for a lack of trying. We make our way to the river, all the while trying to look normal. Three grown men roaming the streets of Londonium at this hour could only be up to no good. Praxos stops behind a two-story stone building and peers around the corner. I ditch my spear as the stink of the river hits me square in the face. It must be low tide or something. Praxos waves his hand and we round the corner, making our way to the docks. Two small fishing boats gently bump against the stone wharf, emitting a soft thumping noise. The hemp ropes at their sterns creak as the river's gentle sway tugs at the dockside bollards. Out here, the crescent moon casts pale shadows of masts onto the ground. Ripples in the surface of the river scatter the moon's reflection. Further down the wharf, Several more silent boats stand sentinel against the dark.
That's the one, Praxos whispers.
We approach one of the larger boats. It has a wooden ramp leading from the wharf to a gap in the gunwales. Praxos puts one boot on the ramp.
What are you doing? A voice snaps from the dark fringes of the night.
Praxos and I lock eyes. I start to speak, but he shakes his head sharply.
I said, what are you doing? Who are you? It's very late to be boarding a boat.
Three shapes emerge from nearby. They all swagger with each step.
Have you lost the gift of speech as well? What are you doing here so late?
I begin to speak when Kindheart pushes my shoulder aside. He leans forward between Praxos and me and vomits on the stone walkway. He laughs in a whimsical, carefree tone, then turns to stagger up the wooden ramp. I force a mocking grin and fake a hiccup just before letting my head flop to the side as I too board the boat.
Just drunk, you see, Praxos mumbles behind me.
Why aren't you drunk too? One of the men asks.
I was on the lookout for whores. My friends are too drunk to find them on their own.
I pretend to fall to the deck of the boat, but make sure I can see Praxos from where I come to rest.
Did you find any?
None we could afford.
Three drunk fishermen out all night drinking, eh?
Yes.
One of the men leans to look around Praxos.
Is that your boat?
It's my friend's fishing boat.
Looks like a merchant boat to me, not a fishing boat.
No, it's a fishing boat.
One of the men points to the boat with a gloved hand.
That's Glycerin's boat, it is. Nobody's allowed on her.
What? No, it's my friend's fishing boat.
Tell your friend to come out here.
Praxos turns and sprints up the ramp. Just as he reaches the boat, I emerge and slide the ramp off the edge. Two of the men who had already started across it now plunge into the dark water between the boat and the wharf. The third man turns and runs toward the wooden watchtower nearby.
Saxons! Saxons in the city! He shouts.
Way to go, Praxos!
Another familiar voice says.
Glycerin, it's good to see you, I say.
And you as well.
He turns to the empty ship.
Now, fellas, let's get out of here.
Leather capes and tarpaulins are thrown aside, revealing nearly a dozen strong men on board the ship. At Glycerin's urging, they begin tugging on the oars. I'm slightly unsteady by the first lurch of the deck beneath my feet. I reach out to Praxos to steady him as an arrow sprouts from my outstretched arm.
I grunt as I try in vain to muffle my own scream. Arrows!
Praxos shouts, just as several more shafts make solid contact with wooden portions of the boat. I kneel, holding my arm. Blood oozes from along the sides of the arrow shaft. Praxos grabs the point of the arrow and snaps it off. I then pull the shaft out of my arm backwards, gritting my teeth and straining my face. I gasp in relief as it pulls free of my skin. Praxos tears a strip of sheer blue material nearby and wraps it around my forearm.
I'm okay. I'm okay,
I say, feeling a slight buzzing in my ears and lightheaded. I focus on my breathing. I grunt aloud.
Stay cool.
Just stay cool, I hiss to myself. Breathe in. Breathe out. I look around. Arrows continue to feather the boat, but the crew seems unconcerned. I wake with the sun in my face, smoothly rising and falling, with the hiss of ocean water spraying as the bow comes down over each small wave. I smell salt in the air, or maybe that's something else. I force my eyes open and try to lift my head.
"You're awake! Let's see that arm,"
Glycerin says. His leather boots make no sound on the wooden deck as he walks to me and kneels. I close my eyes, hold out my arm, and then try to open my eyes again. "How do you feel?"
"I've had worse, but it's..."
I breathe in sharply as intense bolts of pain shoot up my shoulder. "Sorry, apprentice." He pulls his hand back, leans forward and sniffs the bandage.
"Too early to tell."
"To tell what?" I ask.
"Too early to tell if it's infected."
Infection. Lovely. I rest my head back on the... "What am I laying on?" He smiles, slaps his knees and stands.
"Ah! Those is our provisions," he laughs. "Speaking of provisions, are you hungry?"
"That depends. What's for breakfast?"
"Breakfast?" "You missed breakfast, apprentice,"
Praxos rasps.
"It's dinner time. But it doesn't matter. We're eating the same thing, no matter what time of day it is. Carrots, stale bread, and ale. Lots of ale."
Some crew members laugh amidships. One man stands and pisses overboard, barely able to maintain his balance. Praxos turns to watch them for a moment, then turns back, shaking his head.
"You know what we need?"
One of the men asks the entire crew, sloshing a tankard festooned to his person by a dark lanyard.
"After a good fight, I need a good woman,"
Praxos shouts over his shoulder.
"You would know what to do with a woman if she fell out of the sky and into your lap."
They all appear to agree. I chuckle and lay back. The same sharp pain electrifies my arm.
"Are you okay, apprentice?"
Praxos asks, watching me with a concerned face. "Yeah, I just need to lay still." I examine my bandage. "Praxos, I remember you bandaging me. Where did you find this?" I run my fingers over the soft azure cloth.
"I just found it. It was..."
He looks around.
"Over there behind you."
I see it. I reach to my right and tug on it. I barely pull, but it tears free, revealing a pair of smooth white mounds, each capped with a dark red spot the size of an old American nickel. I can't turn away from them. They are perfectly symmetrical, and they jiggle or wobble with each lurch of the ship.
"What are those?"
Praxos says. I roll my eyes. "And I thought you knew what to do with a woman."
"Fine, fine. But what are a pair of woman's teats doing on this ship?"
"Let's find out," I say. I lean over and give one nipple a firm tweak. There's a muffled scream as a bag of supplies moves aside and a hand slides to cover the breasts. "What are you doing here?" I say. She huffs and pulls her gown back around her. Her eyes are caked with sleep, and she bears a red mark on her face where she'd been laying against something.
I'm... Oh, hell. I don't know what I'm doing."
She lays back down, covering her face. "I'd say you have a lot of nerve coming aboard this ship, but you probably already know that." She moves her hand aside and bites her bottom lip. I turn to observe the rest of the crew. They're all standing, with their eyes as wide as shields. One of them seems to jolt to his senses.
"I need another woman and a bag of gold," he bellows,
looking up at the sky with his arms outstretched. The men all swivel their heads. After a few long seconds, the man drops his arms, visibly disappointed.
"Worth a try," I hear one man say.
"This ship is bound for Saxony, m'lady," Glycerin says with a small bow.
"Yes," I add. "It's a one-way trip. You'll have to swim back to Britannia." I squeeze my lips and cock my head. "The sooner you get out, the shorter the swim will be." She grimaces, but then appears to rein in her face.
"I'm going to Saxon too."
"Oh, really? And how do you intend to pay for your passage on the ship? The anvil between your legs? Psst, poor currency, if you ask me." She sits up.
"Although I am the daughter of a noble Brythonic family," she says, with venom in her eyes.
She pushes herself upwards and stands, letting her hands fall to her sides. The cloth covering her breasts also falls away.
"I've satisfied more men than I can count. Not just with what's between my thighs."
She pulls on a piece of her gown, and the front swings open completely, revealing everything.
"I know how to use all my body."
She pushes the blue cloth from her shoulders, and it tumbles to a heap on the wooden deck with a whisper. She steps out of it on nimble bare feet.
"My hands, my mouth, my anvil, and more. Much more."
She examines the face of each crewman in turn. They're all frozen in place, unblinking on her naked body. She then looks down at her chest and brushes a limp fingertip across both her nipples, making them slowly erect themselves. She turns to me.
"This can all be yours, apprentice. As soon as you get me to Saxony, alive and unharmed."
She whips around, retrieves her blue garment, and covers herself.
"Until then, all of you keep your swords in their scabbards."
Nobody makes a sound. Nobody moves. The pregnant pause isn't broken until one of the men drops his tankard.
"Now, what is for breakfast?"
Praxos Glycerin and I exchange a smug grin.
"Tell me, Hecate, why are you really on board this ship?"
Praxos asks, holding a small cup of ale in one hand and a half-eaten carrot in the other. Hecate stares at him for a moment, then at me. She exhales and turns to the stars.
"I cannot go back. Thorium surely knows by now."
"Knows? Knows what?" I ask. She tears at her hank of stale bread with her teeth and chews it like a goat. I can't tell if it's sexy or hideous.
"He knows I'm gone. He may even suspect I'm here with you. And he knows I tried to free you."
I squint. "Me? Free me?"
"Yes.
Praxos and Glycerin freed me. This crew freed me, not you. I don't need your help at all. I was jailed because of you. My friend Orestes is dead because of you.
Yes, I know that. But I was...
She exhales again, apparently trying to steel herself or buoy her confidence.
I was on my way to let you out of your cell.
What? How? Praxos had to kill 3 guards to get me out of there. Exactly how are you going to do that? How would you even get away from Thorium in the first place?
She turns to me with a cold, expressionless face. I made love to Thorium so long and so hard that he passed out from exhaustion.
Praxos and I both blink. Okay, I say.
Plus, I may have slipped something into his evening wine. Then I took his keys and went to the cells. When I arrived, yours was empty. I only had to follow the trail of open doors and dead bodies for a short distance before I realized how you planned to escape the city. I went to the docks and saw 3 of you talking with some guards just outside the ship. When nobody was watching, I slipped into the water, swam to the ship, and shimmied up a mooring rope. Then I hid myself amongst your cargo. Honestly, I could have been a flock of geese and landed on board. Nobody was paying attention.
Wait. I lean back carefully, trying not to jostle my arm. If you'd stolen the keys and were going to break me out of there, how are you planning to get me out of the city? Surely not on board this ship.
She bumps her eyebrows upwards and blows out her breath. Horses. I paid a stable boy on the north side of the city to hold his 2 fastest mounts in reserve until I came for them. I paid him very well, and now he has my money and the 2 horses.
You should have paid him with your anvil. Kindheart snorts at a small sip of ale.
My anvil will buy far more horses than your hammer can, apprentice, she says.
I roll my eyes. Fine, but that doesn't explain why. You've only explained how you got here. I don't have any more idea than the man on the moon as to why you wanted to free me in the first place.
Hecate looks at the faces around her. I don't think it's much of a secret that Thorium is an evil man. At the very least, he is an incompetent governor. He is cruel and thoughtless. He's never harmed me, but I believe he would have someday. He's paranoid, always worried someone is trying to take territory or influence away from him. He used to drink wine every night, to the point where he'd collapse in his seat on the dais. Those were better days. He doesn't indulge much anymore, not even in me. Last night was different. He was celebrating his victory over the Saxons.
Our victory, I interject.
She smiles. I know that, but that is not how Thorium sees it. In his mind, he just won a great victory over the Saxons, and an even greater victory over you.
Praxos, who'd been sitting with his elbows on his knees, pushes himself up.
What does Thorium have against the apprentice? All he did was all he did.
She grins and shakes her head. You are thinking like children. You are attempting to ascribe logical thought to the actions of a paranoid, fearful, illogical, and powerful man. All you did, please, you stole his glory. In his mind, that was supposed to be his victory, apprentice, not yours. Your victory
was his defeat. What's worse is that you were the same person who defied him before he executed Erastus. All you did... Don't be foolish. Okay, so Thorium is a jackass. How exactly does that explain your desire to free me? She pauses, vacantly staring at the deck of the ship. I have been looking for a way out for a while. I thought... She sniffles. I thought whoring myself out for money would help me cope with him. He learned what I was doing and threatened to divorce me. I was scared. I've considered leaving him, but I don't know where I would go. My family is dead, victims of a Pictish raid several years ago. Even my child, my son, he is dead too. I feel my anger being sapped away. Ah, hell, Hecate. I'm sorry about that. How did your son die? It's not important right now. She looks at me and squeezes her lips. When I saw you, I thought you could rescue me. Anyone who would be brave enough or stupid enough to challenge Thorium publicly. She trails off, holding a hand to her face. I'm sorry, she barely manages to whisper before standing and going to the front of the ship, then burying her face in the side of a sack of oats. It's night. The sky is alive with a brilliance I'd never imagined possible. The sail ripples and billows its faded red stripes in the cool breeze. The stars shine their pale light on the ship. Glycerin and Kynhard sit at the rear, holding the steering board. A pulsating orange glow illuminates them from below, casting bizarre shadows on their faces as they turn their attention to a large chart splayed on a wooden crate between them, and then turn back to the stars. Praxos sleeps with a ruddy brown bear fur covering his head, snoring. Most of the crew looks to be the same as him. Hecate had fallen asleep in nothing but her blue robes. I watch her sleeping for a few minutes. She's curled in the fetal position, shivering violently. I curse to myself and lay my own cloak over her. It's a minefield of sleeping bodies, oars, rigging, other supplies, all the way from the prow to the stern. Gentlemen, I say, as I make my way to them, keeping my voice down.
You should have let her freeze to death, Kynhard says.
I merely shrug in response. So how long will this ride take?
If the wind holds, it will take less than a week, Kynhard says.
Glycerin looks at me intently. Oh, sorry. He says we should be there in a week, as long as the wind holds up. He creases his brow.
I could have told you that. Why didn't you ask me?
I'm sorry. I forgot you don't speak any Germanic languages.
No, I don't.
I stare at him narrowly.
Wait. Then how have you and Kynhard been talking back here? Grunts and hand gestures, like a pair of cavemen?
He shrugs and squeezes his lips.
Well, there's something about being a sailor which
transcends normal spoken language, that's all. I look at Kindheart and speak in his tongue. How have you two been talking back here, since you don't speak each other's language?
Mostly hand gestures,
he replies. Right, I say with a smug face. Kindheart, why don't you go get some sleep? I'll keep Glycerin company for a while. He bobbles his head, then moves to an empty ore bench nearby and lays down. I take his seat next to Glycerin. So tell me, how in the world did you and Praxos figure this out?
You mean, why was I waiting for you at the docks?
Yes.
I've known Thorium far longer than you have. I mean, I don't know the man. I just hear stories. But I've heard enough not to trust him. Any man who executes his own father can't be trusted.
I try to lean back a little bit. But what did you do?
He raises his eyebrows and smiles. Praxos met me at the wharf. I had the crew go on land in small groups. They came back discreetly and with more supplies. Any guards watching probably lost track of how many men were left on board. We just stayed ready. Luckily, nobody was injured during our flight downriver. Nobody but you. We retrieved some 50 arrows stuck into the boat, though.
Praxos busted me out of jail, and you provided the getaway vehicle. He squints.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you for saving my hide. Hinks said he was going to kill me in the morning. Kindheart, too.
He nods. It was my pleasure, apprentice.
Well, what do we do now? We're headed to Saxony.
What the hell for?
He tilts his head. We can't go back to Britannia, obviously. The Empire is a wreck. We don't have enough food to make it to the Mediterranean Sea, and I don't like Northmen, so Saxony it is. Besides, we have Kindheart. That must be worth something.
Well, like a hostage?
Sure. We could sell him to some rival tribe, or whatever those crazies in Germania call each other.
I purse my lips. Maybe. I exhale.
Yeah. We could sell a Saxon warlord back to his people, then ask them if we can, what, live there?
Well, yeah. Or we could trade them for more provisions.
Provisions for what? For sailing far away.
Far away from what? Saxony?
Glycerin shakes his head and looks at the stars again.
Look, I really, really don't think selling Kindheart back to the Saxons is a good idea. I mean, I kinda like the guy. I think he's gonna be more help as a friend than as a hostage.
Glycerin and I stared at each other for a moment.
So do I.
Kindheart rolls over and looks at us with a sheepish grin.
You know, your Latin language is much easier to learn than my own.
You prick! You could have told me an hour ago that you spoke my language, before I wasted all that time with hand gestures and grunts.
I look at him.
Shut up, apprentice.
I should have known. It bothered me for just a second last night, because you seemed to understand Praxos when he came to our cell.
Looks like it's settled then. Kindheart is not our hostage.
Fine.
Besides,
Kindheart says,
I have better idea. We can gather army in Saxony and come back to Britannia.
I frown. That didn't go so well for you last time.
True, but next time you'll be in charge, apprentice. I will raise the men. Praxos can teach them, and you can lead them.
What am I supposed to do? Glycerin asks.
You can make the jokes, yes?
Glycerin guffaws and smiles.
Go back to sleep.
crazy goat lover. Kindheart's face draws into a wide, beaming grin as he rolls to his side again and goes back to sleep. Glycerin and I sit in silence for some time. Only the stars and the occasional gust of wind keep us company. "You know," Glycerin starts, "Praxos told me about the letter from Emperor Honorius before he made it to Londinium." I squint. "Okay, and?" He turns to the front of the boat. "He told me the Empire was withdrawing from Britannia, and that now would be an excellent opportunity to raid the island." "Why did he tell you that?" "Despite what you think, we did have something resembling a plan at one point. After I delivered Praxos and his small group with the Roman messenger, I loaded a cargo of woolen bales and tin. I took the goods and the information from Praxos and delivered it to the men at the docks in Saxony with the hope and the intention that they would use that information to organize a raid on Britannia." "Okay, I'm lost. Why would you do that?" "Relax, apprentice. I'm not crazy. While in Saxony, I purchased a huge cargo of iron weapons and armor. If the Saxons did indeed raid the island about when I returned to Londinium, I could have sold the cargo for a fortune. The Saxons would land on the island, do some raping and some pillaging, but once they left, Praxos was supposed to meet me in Camulodunum. With a fortune in one hand, Praxos as my business partner and first mate, we would have made a fearsome crew." "What? Like pirates?" "I prefer the term economic opportunist of the sea, or perhaps tactical cargo transfer specialist." "Right. Got it. So what happened?" "You should know. Praxos was chased down by the mob and had to hide out with you. I guess you and he hit it off pretty well because he stayed too long in Londinium." "He didn't have to come with me on the campaign, you know. He kind of just snuck in with the rest of them." "Well, that wasn't the biggest problem we had. When I arrived in Londinium with my precious cargo of war goods, the men of the docks seized it. Thorium told me I'd be paid for my cargo after the crisis was over. I decided not to hold my breath while waiting on that. And if that wasn't enough, I was pressed into service with Thorium's pathetic little army. Then you had to go and lead that sad little army and defeat the Saxons in battle with it, twice. Praxos and I spoke in private once we were at the fort. We knew that we didn't have the money we wanted to hire a crew, and I felt certain my ship had been confiscated while it sat empty at the docks in Londinium." He smiles. "I tell you, it brought me immense joy when you sent me out on that ship." "And that's the ship we're on now?" "Indeed." He gives the ship's wooden planks a firm slap. "She just needs a name now. Praxos wants to call her the Titanic, after the Titans in Greece." "Should I tell him? I mean, should I? I should tell him. No. Just no. I'll keep it to myself. But I say, bugger the Greeks. I want to name her something more personal to us as a group. Not some jumped up abstract concept from the old world. Any ideas?" I slowly shake my head. "I'll think about it." Both of us stare at the night sky and its uncountable tiny lights, and at the curious patch of sky ahead of us where the stars disappear.
hold on!
Glycerin shouts over the roar of the storm. Blinding spiderwebs of light crawl across the sky, in stark contrast to the dark purple and gray of the surrounding clouds. It hurts too much to look at the sky anyway, for the stinging rain in my face. Another wave lifts the ship with a jolt, then fires a broadside of icy salt water into our laps. Several dark, wet, and hooded figures slave their oars back and forth.
Row! Row! Row!
I try to keep an even tempo for them. With an arrow wound in one arm, it's about all I'm good for right now. Glycerin tries to steer us into the waves, but it seems like half of them hit us in the side anyway. Praxos and the others keep pulling and heaving, deafening cracks and booms. The storm hisses its cold rain on us. I'm soaking wet to my very skin. Hecate is at the front of the ship watching for something. I'm not exactly sure what she's really watching for.
Come on, lads!
Praxos grunts, trying to keep them in high spirits. I turn to Glycerin.
How much further do you think?
There's something about his face. He sees something. Something I don't want to see.
Hold on! Hold on! Hold on!
The sea pushes us skyward, as if we were being launched in a rocket. Then my guts churn as the water instantly ebbs away, and we enter freefall. Hecate's small form even lifts off the boat for a moment. The rain stops falling and simply hangs in the air all around us, suspended. But only for a moment. There's a loud crunch, and the boat comes up to meet my face. I strain to keep my consciousness.
Keep rowing!
Praxos bellows, as he and the others struggle to keep hold of their oars.
Turn, you bastard, turn!
Glycerin chastises the ship. A second wave, this one much smaller, hits us at the front left quarter. A proper sailor would have called this the port bow, but anyway, an Olympic swimming pool of water flows over the deck. When it subsides, there is a vacancy where just before a man set pulling an oar.
Help me! Help me! Help!
He screams and begs as the dark sea drags him to his death. His pleas are cut short by another wave. Hecate leaps up and nimbly jumps to the spot where the man was just seconds before and grabs his oar. She resumes rowing in pace with the others. Glycerin and I share a look. Seawater splashes my face, filling my nose and mouth with salt and what tastes like blood. After a fit of coughing, I resume the pace.
Row! Row!
As our small ship plows a tortured trail through a black sea and a blacker sky, I just hope this trail leads to Saxony.